2 Corinthians 8. I want to hit a couple, just debunk a couple myths. A lot of times we feel like I am not in a position in life to be generous because either my finances are jacked up or maybe I'm in the middle of, just some of the things in life. You know, we have different points in life to where we just get overwhelmed with stuff that it squeezes out our finances, it squeezes out our time, it squeezes out our energy. And as we talk about extravagant generosity, it's not just what we give as far as monetarily or stuff, provision, okay? Because a lot of times we get hung up on that. But generosity is when we release into the lives of other people. And a lot of times it does look like money. It's going to look like something. But a lot of times it does look like money. Sometimes it looks like food. Sometimes it looks like clothes. The provision thing of it. But it can also be just our nature, our spirit, our joy, our love, our peace, our hope. Whatever we're operating in and flowing in. So I want us to get outside the box of thinking just finances. I got a text yesterday from an individual, and they don't go to church here. They used to. It's been years ago. But I got a real long text yesterday from an individual and just thanking us for what we poured into their life. They're doing good spiritually now and all of that. But just, saying, man, y'all were very influential on us. And, thank you for what y'all done and poured into us and, all of those things. And none of it was monetarily. To my knowledge, I've never given that individual a dime. They've never needed it that I would give that to them. But we were generous in other areas. So y'all see what I'm saying on that? Sometimes you can come in, and I've been around people, and one lady that was just still just left a huge mark on me was a lady that used to go to church with Lori back in the day, and her husband was a retired school teacher, and they lived in a little simple house. And man, she loved God, and she just released kindness, and she released peace, and she released joy. And her name was Ruth Nix, Miss Ruth Nix. And she was just like, she epitomized just a woman of faith to me. And the things that she was extremely generous in those things without releasing finances, okay? So I want you to get out of, it definitely can, and a lot of times will be finances, but I want us to get out of the mindset that that's all that Paul's talking about in this. In this, he is specifically talking about a love offering. But I want us to understand that it encompasses more than that. Just to give you a little bit of background, if you forgot from, I think 2 weeks ago we talked about this, we're studying this, so you guys may have got a little bit then. There has been a famine in the area around Jerusalem. A lot of the believers in Jerusalem are living in poverty, extreme poverty. So with that, the Apostle Paul and some of the different ministers are appealing to some of the different churches and say, man, these guys are in real need. And let's see what we can do to help them out. Let's step up. The church at Corinth was doing well. They were affluent. So Titus goes to them and he says, hey man, these guys are really struggling over here. Why don't we, he's the one who initiated the idea. He said, why don't we take up a love offering and let's carry a love offering to them just to help them out, help these people out in life. And I want to tell you something, guys. God wants to use us as a catalyst for things. I love the fact that, when we came back from Honduras, Brett and Red are both already, they're thinking and coming up with ideas on, man, what can we do to impact people down there and get businesses involved and all of that, you know, and they're brainstorming on these ideas, you know, that we want to get these businesses, and they send a key employee, and we'll go down there for a week, man, and we'll just build houses and, you know, get these businessmen to, you know, to commit to, you know, like $5,000 a piece and send an employee for a week. And, you know, we'll go down there, man, and we'll get 10 businesses and we'll knock out 10 houses in 6 days and really impact people, and it'd be beneficial for the businesses. And I love the fact that that's stirring in my son-in-law's minds and hearts. And it takes people to be a catalyst. So let me spend just, I hadn't even planned on talking about this, but it takes people to be a catalyst. And the reason I bring that is why not you? Why not you? I listened to an interview with Tom's. Y'all know who Tom's is, the shoes, Tom's Shoes. I actually bought my first pair about a month ago. I've never owned a pair. You know, they're different, you know, and I'm country and they're a little bit more, you know, metro and all of that stuff, I guess. I don't know the proper word for it, but I absolutely, the girls have owned a lot of them. Lori's just sitting up here just saying, bless him, Lord, bless him. They got a thing to wear is if you buy a pair of shoes, they give a pair of shoes away. And it started when the guy that founded Tom's was in Argentina, and he saw all the kids down there that did not have shoes. And he came back, God really stirred in his heart, and he came back to the States, and he was like, man, I've got enough money that I can buy 4,000 pair of shoes, because he could get the shoes for them for $10 a piece. And he said, I could buy 4,000 pair. He had $40,000 that he could come up with. He said, that was credit and everything. That wasn't cash. That was, I could borrow that kind of money, max out my credit cards and all of that. God really stirred something in his heart. And so he said, I could come back and I could do 4,000 pair of shoes. And he said, I was talking with, you know, with a couple other businessmen and all of that. And one of them says, man, why don't you just, he came up with the idea. Why don't you just start a shoe company? You got $40,000. Why don't you just start being on? You got an entrepreneurial spirit. Why don't you start a shoe company, and you know, and came up with the concept, the idea. Well, instead of him just coming in and liquidating everything he's got and sending 4,000 pair of shoes to Argentina, which would have been awesome in itself, he came up with the idea to start the company. And I think the last I heard when I was listening to an interview with him recently was they had given away 90 million pair of shoes. 90 million pair of shoes. Now, he's gotten extremely wealthy out of this thing, but they've given away 90 million pair of shoes. And so he came up, and now they're doing eye surgeries. And sunglasses, that if you buy sunglasses, they'll do eye surgeries. And I heard a testimony about when they were in Nepal, and they were doing eye surgeries in Nepal for people that had cataracts and all of that stuff and couldn't see, and just amazing stuff. But my point is on that is God used him as a catalyst to bring tremendous blessing and relief into 90 million people's lives. And why can't we be a catalyst for stuff? We say, I don't have the resources to fund something. I'm not talking about funding something. I'm talking about an idea. We don't see where Titus is throwing up this huge saying, man, I'm going to do matching funds, and if y'all will raise $10,000, I'll match it with $10,000. He simply came in and said, guys, there's tremendous need over there. What if we did something about that? What if we all pooled our resources, and what if we all came together and said, let's do something to help that need? And so Titus was a catalyst on this, and I just want to challenge you to walk through life with eyes wide open and say, what can I do to make a difference, or who do I know that can make a difference? Part of mine and Lori's prayers recently is, and I'll say in the last year or so, is God connect us with people that can make a difference, you know, a big difference in kingdom stuff. You know, let us develop relationships, and it ain't got to be a deep relationship. I'm not really interested in super deep relationships, but let us connect with people that you can pull resources from to fund kingdom things. We go to a lot of nice hunting lodges and fly fishing lodges and stuff like that, and we meet some extremely amazing people, some extremely wealthy people with these things, and we'll spend a few days with them, and we'll have meals with them, and we'll talk about life with them and all of that. And, you know, I'm like, God, hook us up with some of these people that have got a generous spirit about them so that they can sow a lot of money into kingdom stuff, you know. And part of our prayer is, Lord, make us those people. But even on top of that, connect us with other people. And to me, that just feels so right to come in and say, God, I just want to position myself so we can leverage things to release into the kingdom. And that's what Titus did. Titus had a relationship with the people at Corinth. And so he said, man, I know these folks at Corinth, man, and they're doing well in many areas in kingdom living and kingdom life. So I'm going to appeal to them. They are more wealthy than most of the people that the other churches in the regions and all of that stuff. So I feel like they've got the resources to do that. And so they come in and they're like, hey, man, let's do this. And everybody on Corinth got on board. And so he said, I'm going to come back. When I come back, or Paul comes back, we're going to collect this offering and we're going to carry it to him. And it was going to be nearly a year. It was nearly a year that they had to collect this offering. So it was plenty of time to plan, prepare, and all of this. And in the meantime, what happened was Titus went down into Macedonia, which was basically the churches of Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. And now these guys were the opposite of Corinth. These guys were poor. All right, they were under duress. They were impoverished. It said right here. Let's see. During a season of severe difficulty and tremendous suffering, and he went down there and he just, you know, he wasn't down there hitting them up and saying, "Hey guys, you know all of this." They start talking about the need in Jerusalem. They start talking about the church at Corinth is going to step up and take up this big love offering and all this. So y'all know what these other churches did? They said, man, we want to get involved in that. We want to get involved in that. And so that's the thing that it's contagious. That's the thing about the CCC. The CCC started out with how many churches, Jeffrey? Obviously one, but there was a small amount. And when these churches said, let's do this, and they started committing to it, you know what other churches said? Man, this is a good idea. Let's get on board. And now there's, what, 50 churches? Close to 50 churches that are involved in this. And it's a tremendous ministry down for Harrelson County now. And the needy people in Harrelson County does a myriad of things down there. But it started with one person being a catalyst, all right, and saying there's a need. Let's do something to address the need. And then they began to tell people, and it got contagious, and people started catching on. So I want to challenge us tonight, not just be the guy that's generous, but to be a catalyst. And be a guy that promotes things that are doing well, man. Be an ambassador and say, man, there's a need here, and these people are doing tremendous things for this need. Ministry, kingdom ministry stuff. And so he goes and he tells the people in Macedonia, the churches, and like I said, it was mainly Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. And these people were not wealthy. They did not have a lot of stuff going on, but they said, we want to partner with that. And we want to take up a love offering. And so that's kind of where we are. And the Apostle Paul's coming in, and he is writing to the church at Corinth, and he's telling the church at Corinth about these other churches and their heart for giving, and he's challenging them to make good on what they committed to. Because he's like, man, you know, 9 months ago, y'all committed for this big love offering, and y'all made and they told him, they said, we'll commit to this amount. It doesn't say what amount, but they committed and said, we're going to raise this much funds. And so he's coming in at the 9 month mark and saying, all right, guys, it's time to make good on what you committed to. And, a lot of us have made all of these commitments to God and all these commitments to people and all these commitments to kingdom stuff and all of that. And, guys, we got to follow through on that stuff. How many of y'all have made commitments with good intention and a good heart, but yet, because of whatever reasons you failed to follow through on it? And God's like, man, let's follow through. When I make commitments and promises to her, I want to follow through. When I make commitments and promises to James, I want to follow through. When I make commitments to God, I want to follow through. When I make commitments to this house, I want to follow through. I want to follow through to people. And so the Apostle Paul, he's not calling them out, but he's challenging them. Okay? He's challenging them. So that's where we are. Let's start reading. I'm going to start in verse 1 and just read through. We're not going to actually begin our study until about verse 5. But just to give you a little bit of background, in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 1, he said, beloved ones, like I said, he's talking to the church at Corinth. We must tell you about the grace God poured out upon the churches of Macedonia. For even during a season of severe difficulty and tremendous suffering, they became even more filled with joy. From the depths of their extreme poverty, superabundant joy overflowed into an act of extravagant generosity. Now, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, but I want to spend just a second just reiterating this. From the depths of their extreme poverty. So by us coming in and saying, I don't have enough, I don't fly. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough energy. I don't have enough resources. I don't have enough finances. And what we're doing is we're operating from a place of lack, okay, instead of a place of overflow. We have a mindset of lack instead of a mindset of overflow. And he said they were in a place of extreme poverty, but yet they came in and it said superabundant joy overflowed. See, the grace God poured out on them was joy. And it said superabundant joy overflowed into an act of extravagant generosity. For I can verify that they spontaneously gave, not only according to their means, but far beyond what they could afford. And we talked about sacrificial giving. We talked about convenient giving and sacrificial giving. Last week, I think it was Tuesday, I was on the tractor. It might have been Wednesday during the day. I was on the tractor and baling hay. And I was meditating on this scripture, and God spoke to me and all this. And he said, here's what I want you to do to make a point. And so he said, when you get to church, he said, I want you to, I knew I had $50 on my, I carry a little money clip like that instead of a billfold. And I knew I had a $50 bill on there, and I didn't know what all else was in there. I'd be honest with you, I didn't know how much money I had. I knew I had a 50 on the outside, and I knew there was a 100 down in there, but I didn't know how much more was in there. And God told me, he said, when on this concerning this scripture, he said, when you get to church, he said, I want you to take the $50 bill off the outside of it. And he actually told me to give it to one of you guys, but y'all didn't get to come, so my daughter got it. I gave it to Aaliyah. So, man, you missed out. You'd been on the corner, you got the $50 bill. And sorry, that's just the way it works. And Aaliyah was here, Aaliyah got it. And I said, here you go. I said, that was convenient giving. Because while I gave her $50, I still had I had a little bit of cash. This week I got $1. So y'all would just be out of luck. That's all I got this week. Y'all would be out of luck if God had done anything on that. But I had a pretty good thick little thing of money last week. And God said, I want you to give the $50 to the Blake House guy that's on the corner and y'all aren't here. So I gave it to Aaliyah. And that was convenient giving. It really didn't cost me anything. Because I knew I had plenty more money in there. I knew there was a $100 bill stuck in there. And so it's easy for us to conveniently give, right? I mean, how many times have we seen somebody, a homeless person or somebody at the gas station or something like that, and we're like, oh, here you go, man, here's your $5 bill. And it's appreciated on their end, but it really doesn't cost us anything, you know? That's not sacrificial giving. But he said to make a point, I want you to take, he said, and he instructed me, he said, I don't want you to count your money. And, but he said, I want you to take everything else that's in there and I want you to give it to Michael. And, I said, all right, cool, you know, cause I try to be obedient when God tells me to do weird stuff like that. But when I took everything else that was in my money clip and I gave it to Michael, then that became sacrificial giving because that was all the cash I had. The 50 wasn't a big deal because I knew I still had a $100 bill in there and I had some other stuff, some 20s and some stuff. And so I knew, man, I'm good. I can give 50 up. I still got 100. That ain't no sweat. But when God said to give everything to Michael, then that left me with zero. Now I wasn't stone cold broke. I had a debit card. I bought supper that night and I used a debit card. But that was an example of sacrificial giving. And so God wants the people that were here, their joy, their superabundant joy, the grace that he poured into them that looked like joy, it overflowed into sacrificial giving. And my point is, sometimes convenient giving's okay, but when God really gets our heart, that's when we need to release sacrificial giving. Because sometimes he's going to ask us to give it all. Sometimes he's going, we're going to say, God, I got to do this with that money next week. Or if I do that, I won't be able to go out to eat tonight. Or I won't be able to take my wife on a date or whatever. And God says, dude, the guy that started Tom's, he said the $40,000, I'm pretty sure it was $40,000 that he used to start the company. He said that was every bit of cash I had, every bit of credit that I had, and I maxed out all my credit cards. That was sacrificial giving to start something that God told him to do. And that's what this church did. These churches, this group of churches in Macedonia. So I don't want us to get caught up in the trap of simply conveniently giving. Okay? One thing, y'all heard me say this a lot, and I hate to keep beating this drum and all of that stuff, but one thing that, Lord, we're in a place of blessing right now. But one reason that we're in a place of blessing right now is because we have followed God's principles pretty much our whole adult life, especially the last 10 years. I mean, really tried to hardcore the last 10 years. And so we've tried to, you know, we've always tithed, even when we couldn't afford it. You know, couldn't afford it, but you can't afford not to tithe. But we've always tithed, and we've always tried to be generous. Even when we didn't have money to be generous, and we didn't technically have money to tithe, but we did it anyway because that was the word of the Lord in His word and the word of the Lord to us. And that's one reason that we're in a place of blessing right now, I'm convinced. Hard work marries itself to that, but that's one reason we're in a place of blessing. And I know a lot of people, and they run around, and they always are in a financial struggle and all of that stuff. I mean, it's not just a season, because there's seasons of it. Dude, I have been there, a financial struggle. But it's a lifestyle. And a lot of it is because they never feel like that I'm in a place to where I can be generous or I can follow God's principles. And these churches in Macedonia, they're like, dude, we ain't got nothing but here. What we got, we're so moved on our heart. We trust in Jehovah Jireh that He's going to provide our needs. So, bam. I absolutely love this. Lori kept it and put it in her Bible, and I heard her mention it the other night at ladies' meeting when I came up with Sydney Hanna and one of the others. Hey, have you got that? Is it in your other Bible? Here it is. Y'all know what that says? What's that say, brother? Tooth Fairy Tithe. Tooth Fairy Tithe. That's one of the kids in our church. It's David and Tiffany's little girls who it is. But that's one of the kids in our church. And she took her Tooth Fairy money, and she tithed off of her Tooth Fairy money and came and presented it to the Lord in the basket down here. And she's getting it from an early age. How old was Isabel? Seven? That's a seven-year-old that's saying, man, and what's the going rate for the Tooth Fairy at y'all's household? I have to ask Tiff. Tiff feels it. She's in contact with the Tooth Fairy. But that tore me up. That didn't just impress me. That melted me. Lord showed me after church, and she said, "This is my. I'm keeping this in my Bible." But you know what that's doing? That's teaching. The word says to train up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they'll not depart from it. That is, y'all are training up a child to be generous, not just to tithe, but to be generous. And man, she will never operate in a place of lack, but because of that, I promise you that I believe that. I'm not saying she won't have a season where it's like, I'm kind of tight right now, but her lifestyle will not be a lifestyle of lack. And so they came in and it said they spontaneously gave not only according to their means, but far beyond what they could afford. They actually, look, I love this verse right here, man. I've got an underlined circle and a star beside it. He said, they actually begged us for the privilege of sharing in this ministry of giving to God's holy people who are living in poverty. They begged us. There's a few words in here that jump out to me. Number one, they begged us. When's the last time we begged to be able to give to somebody? Whether it's time, whether it's love, whether it's where we're like, you know, dude, let me pitch in. Let me do whatever. You know, let me serve. Let me do whatever. Let me keep nursery. Y'all need nursery. Let me keep nursery. You know, y'all need help cleaning bathrooms. Let me do that. Y'all need help in the yard. Let me do that. And they begged us for the next key word that jumps out at me, for the privilege. Anything I do that can and will add value to other people's lives. I'm not talking about just church activity. But anything that I can do that will add value to other people's lives, that will add value, especially children, man, get me big time. I mean, I'm all of them, but, man, kids just, like, mess with me bad. And anything that I can do for that, you know what? It's a privilege. It's a privilege, Randy. It's not a burden. It's not a weight. It's not, man, I got this mantle on me. I got this calling on me and all of that stuff. Physically, I was pretty wiped out this afternoon. I spent just a little bit of time going back through this and all of that. And about 6 o'clock, I laid down on the couch and I set my alarm. It's like 10 after 6, and I set my alarm for 6:30. And I said, I got time for a 20-minute power nap. And it would have been real easy for me tonight to say, man, obviously I'm teaching, so I got to show up, you know. It kind of comes with the position, all that. But it would have been easy for me to check out and say, man, I'm just going to take it off. But instead of me viewing this as a burden, it's a privilege to come up here and share the gospel with you guys. It's a privilege to be able to stand up here and talk about the one that redeemed me and the one that redeemed us, and to share that blessed hope with you guys. It's a privilege to be able to sow money into CCC or to Heidi Baker or to, you know, or to Project World Ministries or any of these other things that are out there. It's a privilege, an honor, and a privilege to be able to do that. It's a privilege to be able to serve. So quit looking at our callings like this is some heavy, boy, I wish God, why did God put this on me? You know, why have I got this responsibility and all of that stuff? Dude, it's a privilege to be able to pour into somebody's life. You know, it was a privilege for you to be able to adopt 2 boys and to provide them a wonderful home. It was a privilege for you to be able to do that. You know, and people are like, oh man, they are so blessed because of that. I don't know which one's more blessed, them or you, Sharon. Because I've seen what it's done in your life. And so we need to understand. And these guys are saying, man, they begged us for the privilege. And then the third word that jumped out for me, for sharing in this ministry of giving. Ministry of giving. Giving's a ministry, guys. A lot of times, giving is just as significant as me standing up here with a mic. When we go to Honduras, I don't teach and preach down there. You know what I do when I'm in Honduras? I serve. We just go down there and serve. You know, Marty's like, man, y'all want to teach? You know, y'all want to preach? I'm like, dude, go for it. I just want to serve. I just want to build houses, and I just want to give people food, and I just want to lay hands on people and pray for people and all of that stuff. And they said it's a ministry of giving, but I feel just as significant kingdom-wise when I'm driving a nail as I do when I'm standing up here with a microphone in my hand on Sunday morning or Wednesday night at Victory Fellowship. So anything that we do out there that releases kingdom is ministry. Don't think that the ministry is just for the proper word's not ecclesia, because that's the call ones, that's the church. It's not for the pastors. It's not just for the people that are on staff and all that. Man, it's for all of us. And but you coming in, Randy, and if you approach you own several rental properties, if you approach that properly, that can be a ministry. You know, it's not a thing where I'm just lining my pockets and making a lot of money and all of this stuff, but it can be a ministry. It, with us owning and running a business, can has the opportunity to be a ministry. We can actually give somebody a job. And so I want you to understand that there's so much that we can do in our everyday life that is ministry. And so those words just jumped out at me. And then he comes in and he says, in this ministry of giving to God's holy people who are living in poverty. Verse 5, this is where we want to start our study tonight. They exceeded our expectations by first dedicating themselves fully to the Lord and then to us according to God's pleasure. He said they exceeded our expectations. He didn't say they exceeded our expectations because they gave a good love offering. He said they exceeded our expectations. They went above and beyond because they committed themselves to the Lord and to us. And basically they're coming in and they're saying, all right, God, you got me. And I'm committed to you. I'm committed to kingdom life. And whatever that looks like, whatever's required in that. One of the big prayers that I pray nearly on a daily basis is as I just come in and I'm like, God, my life's yours. And whatever that looks like, whatever that looks like, my life's yours. You know, wherever that takes me, whatever it costs me. And that's not some big martyr thing. I'm not being noble or anything like that. I'm just sitting here saying, God, you have given me everything. You have given me life, the gift of life. You've given me the gift of salvation. You've given me the gift of peace, of love, of joy, of hope, and all of these things. You've been Jireh, which means the Lord my provider. You've been Jireh in my life around every corner. You've always been there and provided for me. So, you know, the least I can do is come in and say, God, you've done everything in my life, so my life's yours. And the cool thing about it, guys, is when we totally give ourselves to the Lord, you'll be amazed at how much He will come in and give you freedom and say, now you can chase after the desires of your heart. Because I can trust you. I don't have to rein you in. I can trust you. And so now let's chase after the desires that are in our heart. And this is what the people at Macedonia and the churches, he said they exceeded our expectations. We were looking for a love offering, but they came and they dedicated themselves fully to the Lord. And they said, God, whatever, whenever, however. But then he comes in and then he says, but then they dedicated themselves fully. You notice that fully word in there? It didn't say partially, fully to the Lord. And then to us, according to God's pleasure. And one thing that I brought up in this is we have got to, if we want to live life in a full measure, in a full realm, is we have got to allow God to connect us to people and to causes and ministries and all of that. And when I say ministries and causes, the channel through that is connecting you to people. God will connect you with people. And when He connects you with people, and you dedicate and you commit to that, it can carry you into some amazing places. And sometimes that looks like committing yourself and dedicating yourself to a house. Sometimes it'll look like committing and dedicating yourself to a ministry. Jeffrey has committed himself not only to God, but he's committed himself to serving at CCC because he believes in that. And so he's come in and he's committed him and dedicated himself to the Lord, but he's dedicated himself to Alan and the people up there that are spearheading this ministry. And this is the same thing that these folks did. And I want to tell you something. You know what Jeffrey does every Thursday night? He's at CCC. His Thursday nights are not his own. But I guarantee you, if you ask Jeffrey, is it worth it? He'd say, absolutely, yes. It's worth every inconvenience. It's worth every nights that he probably physically does not feel like going up there. He's like, man, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. Maybe I had a bad day. I don't feel good. And I just don't feel like going. But he says, but you know what? I've committed myself to the Lord, and I've committed myself to these people. So I go and I do. And our lives are enriched because of that. We're blessed because of that. And a multitude of people are blessed because of that. And so they exceeded our expectations. And that's the opposite of what our society teaches today, because our society is all about being narcissistic, and it's all about me, and it's all about for me. And what do I feel like doing and what benefits me and all of this stuff. But when we become selfless, then the backflow that comes back on our life makes our life so, so rich. You know, it's the whole thing in order, the way up is down. In order to find your life, you first have to lose your life. All of these things. And that's what we're seeing with these people. All right, let's move on. Anybody got any comments? Anybody good? I know this is just kind of, this is not filet, cast iron skillet filet. I know tonight is pintos and cornbread, but this pintos and cornbread will change your life. So, man, just latch on to this stuff. Verse 6, he said, that is why we appeal to Titus, since he was the one who got you started and encouraged you to give. Since, can anybody say catalyst? He was the catalyst. So he came in and then he said, so he can help you complete this generous undertaking on your behalf. Now, I want to bring this in on the backside because this is important. When I was talking about us being a catalyst and talking about the Tom's guy, did that resonate with anybody a while ago? You're like, man, I could see myself, you know, being a catalyst and coming up with ideas and helping facilitate stuff. Maybe you were challenged just a little bit. Well, here's the thing about this. In order to be a catalyst, not only do you are you the one that gets the spark going or gets the ball rolling, you're the guy that comes in on the other side of it and helps complete the thing also. So you can't just come up with an idea and say, okay, boom, here's a great idea, tag, you're it. A perfect example was Monday night. I came up Monday night late. I had to pick up Sydney Hannah and one of the Edenfield girls from gymnastics. But when I came up, man, it was beautiful to start with. They had a ladies meeting up here Monday night. And they had it out here on the lawn, and that's what the lights are still strung out there for. They had couches out there, and they were doing panel. They had a really good meal, and then they were doing panel discussion, some great worship and all of that stuff. And when I pulled up, man, it just felt right. I mean, I bet I could ask any of y'all women, and y'all were like, man, it was legit. It was legit. It's just a legit evening. I mean, I walked up immediately. I was just like, man, this feels good. I mean, I wish I'd been here the whole time because I know this is stinking awesome the whole evening. You know, of course, they didn't record it. And, you know, I'm trying to get information out of Lori, and it's, you know, it's like pulling teeth and all that. And she's like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I'm spent. I'll fill you in later and all that. Of course, she never did fill me in. You know, then the next day it all goes into yard work and stuff like that. So I never did get filled in. But I came up and it felt so amazing. Okay. How did that evening happen? First, Ariel said, let's have a ladies' meeting. So she emails me and Jeffrey and says, hey, are y'all cool if I schedule a ladies' meeting? And we're like, yeah, go for it. Y'all have fun. Knock yourself out. And so she schedules the ladies' meeting and said, hey, we're going to have a ladies' meeting. And they're always good, so the ladies always enjoy it. And it's always a time of refreshing. We got ladies that go to other churches that come to our ladies' meeting that are just like, this is stinking awesome. I love this. And they come and they get refreshed and all of this stuff. Well, Errol was a catalyst that got it started. And then she's like, okay, who we're going to get to lead worship and who we're going to get to teach and all of that stuff. So she kind of got the ball rolling. But if she had just got the ball rolling, then y'all wouldn't have had much of a ladies' meeting, would you? There takes coming in on the other end of it and saying, all right, because I know personally she cooked all day long for it. Lori was literally in the kitchen all day long and then did part of the teaching. Her and Kami and Krista did the panel discussion and teaching and all of that stuff. So there has to be the back end. We can't just be a catalyst and come up with a great idea. We got to follow through with it. We got to help other people follow through with it. Because I can come in and I can say, hey man, I got a great idea, Randy. And Randy, that's a good idea, man. I like that idea. I think that'd be awesome. But if I don't follow through and help bring that idea home, I think would be a good phrase. And get Randy and say, all right, Randy, you remember that idea that I had and you said it was a good idea and I could see God stirring in your heart and all of that stuff. Yeah. All right, let's bring that idea home. And so there's got to be a front side on being a catalyst, but there's got to be a back side on being a catalyst. So I want to encourage you to follow through with others so you can help other people be successful. You see what we were doing with the I'll go back to the ladies meeting. There were we got a lot of young. Our church has really got a lot of young couples in it, and you know, a lot of young ladies in their 20s and all of that stuff, and they need somebody to teach them how to do stuff like that. I see a lot of people, they don't know how to host. They don't know how to host a group. You know, their idea of hosting and hosting a group. I'm not saying this is bad 100% of the, I mean, ever, but it's bad most of the time. If I'm hosting, you're not going to show up at my house and there's going to be three boxes of Domino's pizzas in there. Every once in a while, it's a rarity. I'm not saying you got to go over the top, but when you're hosting, there's a lot that goes into it. When you're doing a wedding, there's a lot that goes into it. And the reason I'm even bringing this up is these more mature ladies, like my wife, I didn't say older, but these more mature ladies that have been there and done that, they got to teach these young ladies how to do this. James said Madeline came home talking about how awesome it was. And I heard Madeline was awesome in worship. I got the tail song that she was doing playing the guitar. And I'm like, I saw you up there playing the guitar, Madeline. Cat's out of the bag. And she was leading worship with a guitar. But you know what? Madeline is a 15-year-old young lady. And Madeline needs to be modeled and patterned in front of, this is the way you do this stuff. One reason I'm so excited about her and Noah being on the worship team, because this is a tremendous training ground for them in a small, you know, family church. They're not on the big stage at Bethel and Reading and all the pressure and all of that stuff. Not saying there's not pressure here, but it's a lot better environment for them learning and growing and all of that stuff. And Titus coming back, he said Titus was the catalyst that got it started. Now he's going to come in and we're going to bring that idea home. And Titus had to understand, it's not enough for me to get something started, but I got to bring it home also. Everybody understand what I'm saying in bringing it home? I got to bring it home also. So this is what he's talking about in verse 6. That's why we appeal to Titus, since he was the one that got you started, encouraged you to give, so he could help you complete this generous undertaking on what? Not on Titus's behalf, not even on the church at Jerusalem's behalf, but on your behalf. So who's benefiting from this? The church at Jerusalem? Absolutely. But who else is benefiting from this? You are. I always say that about a mission trip. I've done three of them, so in my vast experience of doing mission trips, I don't know who gets more blessed, the people that I go to minister to or me. Because I come back and it wrecks my world every time I go. It wrecks my world. I hope y'all get as much out of the Sundays when I'm teaching and preaching as I do. Because I want to teach something. I leave this place and I'm like, God, you are amazing. God, you are good. My prayer is usually, God, I hope I communicated it halfway decent so that they got what I got out of that. So when we give, when we're generous, when we're serving, I think it was Mike Bickle. I referenced this. I think it was Mike Bickle I heard recently saying that if you are bored in your faith, start serving and you will stop being bored in your faith. When we start serving, it brings us out of a place of being lethargic. And so this is what he's saying right here. He said, this is for your behalf. Then in verse 7, he said, you do well and excel in every respect. Now, this is what Corinth was doing well. He said, you do well and are excellent in every respect in unstoppable faith. So they were excelling in their faith. They were excelling in powerful preaching. Man, they were flowing in the gifts. They had anointed ministers in there. Powerful preaching. In revelation knowledge. In your passionate devotion. And in sharing the love we have shown to you. He said, man, y'all are doing great in all of these areas. Y'all are powerful. You're excellent in these. And he said, so make sure that you also excel in grace-filled generosity. He's putting it on the same line as powerful preaching, revelation knowledge, passionate devotion, and sharing love and unstoppable faith. He's putting grace-filled generosity on the same line as that. And basically he's saying you can have all of these things, but if you don't have grace-filled generosity, you're not complete. You're not complete. You are incomplete. You're doing great on all of this. Have y'all ever seen anybody that, man, they could preach? I mean, like preach, 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 and they had a crappy marriage? I personally have. I've heard a ton of stories. A lot of the big name ministers, you know, you see them on TV and all of this, and just, I mean, they're God's man of power for the hour, but their kids don't want nothing to do with church. Their wife doesn't want anything to do with church, doesn't want anything to do with them. And while they are excelling in these areas, they're missing the boat in obviously some other areas. And the Apostle Paul said, guys, y'all got it going on in all of these areas. He said, make sure that you've got it going on in grace-filled generosity. Because if you can preach the house down, but you're not generous, you're missing the boat. You're incomplete. You can have all these words of knowledge, but if you're not generous, you can be the prophet to the nations, but if you're not generous. I don't care how anointed I am, or I don't care how much I'm doing big kingdom stuff. If she doesn't want to follow me and she doesn't want to follow God, then I'm screwed up somewhere. If my kids don't want to serve the Lord, if they don't want to follow in the footsteps of me and Lori, then I've missed the boat in some areas of my life. I'm throwing that out there. I think that's true. I'm not saying that our kids are perfect. You know, if we throw that out there, then Adam sinned and God did something wrong. I'm not saying that but I'm talking about when, how many times, maybe some of y'all at a point in y'all's life where you're like, if that's Christianity, no thanks, I don't want anything to do with it. That's one of the biggest things, the areas that we see in ministering to people is they come in and they are so skeptical about church life because they had parents that would teach one thing and preach one thing in public and then go home and not model any of it. And so it's important that we get in this. It's grace-filled generosity. He said, make sure that you also excel in that. And I tell you what my heart is for Victory Fellowship. And I'm pretty sure Apostle Paul talked about it in 1 Corinthians 13. He came in with them and he said, man, if I can prophesy to the nations and I can speak in tongues and I can do all these amazing things. But he said, but if I don't have love, he said, all it is noise. And if we can't love well, if we can't love the ones that are not like us, if we can't love the ones, if I can't go up and honestly hug somebody that is, we saw a lady at the landfill that we saw in February. We actually visited her house and they built her a house in March right on the edge of the landfill down in Tegucigalpa. And dudes, I mean, this is like, you know, the environment that they're in, rummaging through the city garbage and all that, they are beyond, it's rough. And when I saw her, the first thing that I did, I recognized her immediately. And the first thing I did, man, is I walked over, you know, through all this trash and all of this stuff, and I gave her a big hug. And it was a big, genuine hug. And I didn't care if I got dirty or if I stunk or anything like that afterwards. And I guarantee you that spoke volumes to her. That this gringo, and I remember them from, you know, because I was with David, so she definitely knew who I was, because David and built her a house, and for her to say, man, this guy comes in and he genuinely cares me. You know, I didn't have cotton swabs stuck up my nose, a Vaseline on them, and all of that, and a mask on or anything like that. Just come in, that's one thing that I saw when we went in February, especially. Is a lot of these ladies that were working in this landfill and all that stuff, man, they wanted Lori to hug them. And Lori was out there hugging these ladies and all of that stuff. And that speaks way more volume than me giving them a $5 bill. Or even a bag of food. Or a sandwich. Now, love looks like something. But in those cases, it looked like a hug.
Her countenance is different from the February.
Yeah, we noticed that about her in when we saw her in last month. Her countenance was different than when we saw her in February, and I like to think that she had more hope because she was raising, and there was a slew of kids. I don't know how many of them were hers. I mean, it's just like the family's kind of, you know, you get, it's a, you know, the whole community's the family in the house and the, you know, two or three generations and all that. But maybe it's just because, man, I had a house to live in now. My kids aren't living in a tin lean-to. They've actually got a floor to sleep on and a bed and all of that stuff. But we noticed her countenance was different. And love's going to look like something. And he's telling them, he says, guys, y'all got it going on with the powerful preaching, but if you ain't loving well, I don't give a rip about your powerful preaching. Y'all can have it going on with all the gifts of the Spirit, but if you ain't got love, I don't care about that. If you don't have generosity, I don't care about that. And so he's challenging them right here. He said, make sure that you also excel in those things. Verse 8. I'm not saying this as though I were issuing an order, but to stir you to greater love by mentioning the enthusiasm of the Macedonians is a challenge to you. He said, I'm trying to stir you to greater love. So he's saying in this that generosity, extravagant generosity, is greater love. One reason that we don't impact the world more is we don't love the world enough. We love our own. I'm guilty of this. I'm guilty of this. I remember right after 9/11, we just had the anniversary of that. Right after 9/11, we fly a good bit. And we actually had a flight like 3 weeks after that, and it was eerie because there was like nobody on the flight but about 12 people. But every time I flew, probably the next year after that, any time I saw an Arab-looking person, I was already figuring out how I was going to be able to kill them with my ink pen. You know, it's like, boy, if they do anything, man, I'm gonna stab them right here. I'm gonna take them down and all of this stuff. You know, and God's like, how are you gonna minister if you view them as your enemy, or we're not talking Arab here, but let's talk about the poor of developing countries. If I view them as inferior to me, then how am I going to minister to them? I bet y'all go into some places, I hope not, but it probably, and that's from the testimony of some of the people, I bet y'all go into some places and some religious people in some of the churches probably view y'all as inferior to them because y'all are in rehab. They're like, boy, they screwed up. We got all these issues and all this stuff and all that. And so they come in and they view you as being in an inferior place. And because they view you in that, you know what that does? That completely stops any flow of ministry whatsoever. And I'll be honest, man, I go to some of these developing countries, whether it's on a leisure trip or a mission trip or something like that, and most of them ain't got the work ethic that we've got in America. You know, and I'm kind of like, man, y'all step it up, and you start working harder, and you'll have more and all of that stuff. But now those people in the landfill, they're working their rear end off. But what we do is we come in and we say they're not like us. Therefore, I don't love them like I should. I'm kind of like that with liberals. I'm going to be honest with you guys, man. I have a hard time relating to liberals. I do. I'm like, I don't get it. But you know what? They're not my enemy. You know, I have to check myself because I'll view Nancy Pelosi as my enemy. I'll view some of these ultra-liberals as my enemy. And God's like, how can you release kingdom love to them if you view them as your enemy? And so we have to check ourselves on this. And so he said, man, I'm calling you to a place to stir you to greater love. And then he does it by mentioning the enthusiasm of the Macedonians as a challenge to you. I want to be a testimony of the grace of God, the love of God, the power of God in my life, that, you know, God did this. We come in and we're like, well, man, I just want to fly under the radar and be low profile and all that. I don't. I want the world to see God's fingerprints all over my life. Quit it with your modest humility, you know, your fake humility. And it's not modest, your fake humility. And so, man, I just don't want the, you know, I don't want to put myself out there like I'm a big deal or anything like that. And you'll post 800 photos on Facebook and Instagram trying to show the world your great life. Just come in and say, man, I want the world to see God's fingerprint all over my life. And it looks like grace, and it looks like love, and it looks like Him being Jireh, and it looks like all of these things. I want the world to see me. I want the world to see God's grace operating in my life. He came in and he was bragging on the church, the Macedonians, those three churches, and he said, guys, look what these people are doing. God did it when Satan came in and was challenging him. He said, have you considered my servant Job? He said, whoa, 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 time out. Check out Job. Look at him, devil. Peter and John, when they're going to the temple, and the guy's sitting there, and he's asking for alms and all that, and Peter says, man, look on us. This guy wasn't looking up. He just had his coin cup out, wanting a cup. He said, man, look on us. I've got something I want to release into you. And I've got something for the world. You guys have got something for the world. And you say, man, I'm not in a place right now. No, you're in a place where you're experiencing God's grace, God's mercy, God's love, God's forgiveness, God's compassion. And you know what? That can be a testimony for everybody else that's going through anything in life. It doesn't have to be an addiction issue. Any adversity that they're going through, you guys can say, you know what, man, I went through a tough time and God was, man, He was there. And I stayed faithful to my commitment to Him. And He did all these amazing things in my life. The Word says we overcame by the power of the blood and by the word of our testimony. The word of our testimony. And that's what He's throwing out right here. He said, I'm challenging y'all by mentioning the enthusiasm of the Macedonians. I want to do that a little bit with some of these big churches that can't support stuff like FCA and all of that. I want to be like, dude, we're a little bitty church, and a little bitty country church in Bremen, man. We got 150 people show up on Sunday morning, and we're supporting 3 FCAs every month. And y'all got 1,500 people. And you can't even buy a biscuit. So I want to challenge y'all. Not saying I'm better than y'all, but I want to challenge y'all. So it's good for us to be challenged by people, and I hope that our life challenges others. All right? Compels them.
I don't really want that, but anyway. You talk about being generous. And it doesn't have to be money by any means. And I'll give you the best example I can give you is I watched my dad. Time I was a little kid, help other people. And my dad wasn't saved. My dad didn't get saved until 10, 12 years ago. But he was always, always generous with his time, whether it was his family, my mother's family, you know, me. It didn't matter. He was just always generous with his time. So it was modeled before me, so I've always tried to be that same way. And I said, it's that humility part of time. I'm trying not to build myself up, but we were sitting in a life group and we were talking about this very same thing. I made that point the other night about my dad. And so I've tried to be the way. My wife said, yeah, it used to drive me crazy when you were like that because I was generous with my time as much as anything. But the point she was making is it was modeled before me and people are watching. You don't know who's watching you. Somebody's always watching you. But it wasn't modeled before her. And she's had to learn it all these years that me and her have been married. But it was, I'm just saying, you never know who's watching you, and you never know what you're doing for someone else. I've always tried to be generous. I went and helped this couple one time. It was nothing. I mean, it was literally nothing. I went and helped them for a couple hours just to do something they really needed. But I didn't go just because they were friends of mine. I was trying to show them how to be in their life. You know, all you got to do is give a little time. You can give money. Yes, money's the easiest thing to give, just to be honest with you. It really, money's the easiest thing to give. Give them your time. But after I got done with them, this girl took the time to write me a note that I've carried in my Bible all these years. And this, you said the few words. I mean, I was going to read you the last thing she said in this letter. And I've carried it for years because I loved it. She said, thank you for your love for us and your generosity. It's one of y'all's daughters, by the way. That's all it takes.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Well, what it does is it propels them to good works. It provokes them to good works. Exactly. Did yes. Yes. Well, see, here's the thing, too, and I know this won't pick up because I didn't run back here and give you the mic, but the when we do the generosity thing and it doesn't look huge, it may be huge in seed form. Did y'all hear that? It may be huge in seed form. Seed is not huge, but it becomes huge. An acorn is not huge, but it becomes a mighty oak tree. I've got oak trees in my yard you cannot wrap your arms around. They're so big. They started out in seed form at one point in time. So we think this isn't big, but it may be seed. I'll close with this. When we were talking about this a couple weeks ago, were y'all here when I was telling the story about one of the little boys that we built the house for in Honduras? And he beat us down to the next house we were going to build, you know, about a half mile down the little pig trail and all that stuff. That's exactly what we're talking about tonight. Is it did something in him that, man, these people came from a, it'd be, you know what would have been the easiest thing for us to do? Send a check for $1,700 and paid somebody else to build them a house. They would have still got a house, but they would not have got 18 gringos traveling to their country, showing up in their neighborhood and saying, we're here, we're going to build you a house. Y'all see the difference in that? And that goes on with what Randy is saying. A lot of times the easiest thing is just writing the money. But it did something in this kid, and it was seed form. It'd be interesting to see how it develops in him. You know, there was a speaker at, well, I'll close with this since I already told y'all that story. There was a speaker at the worship conference, the Bethel Worship Conference this year. And he was actually working for Compassion International now. And I think it was the same guy that spoke in Dallas, Cindy. And he's actually in the Army now. I say he works for Compassion. He speaks on behalf of Compassion. Isn't he in the Army, Cindy? Lord, wasn't he in the Army? He's in the U.S. Army. But he was from one of the developing countries in Africa. I forgot which country it was, Ghana or somewhere like that. And somebody sponsored him as a kid. And it totally changed at $38 a month, but it totally changed the trajectory of his life. It allowed him to get an education. It allowed him, he came to know Christ. Everything about his life changed. And now he's come in and he's been living in the U.S. for several years. He's in the military, in the U.S. military. And he speaks on behalf of Compassion International at certain events and all of that stuff. And he says, I am proof that a life has changed. And I guarantee you that this cat, I guarantee you this cat's paying it forward. That's kind of the term they use now, are we paying it forward? Guarantee you he's doing that. And so I just want to challenge us to provoke one another to good works, provoke one another to love. But if we don't have it in us and it's not genuine in us, we can't stir it in somebody else because they can smell fake. The world can smell fake. They can smell fake. So let's just be genuine. That's what I want our church, just to be genuine. I really don't care if we're the biggest. I really don't care if we're, you know, have got, you know, all these accolades on this and this and this. I just want us to be genuine in our love for people. I want us to genuinely love you guys. I want us to genuinely love every visitor that comes through those doors. Genuinely love everybody that's going to be here on Sunday morning, no matter what they look like, you know. And just genuinely love them and release kingdom into them. You got something you want to close with? You good? Okay. All right, let's stand to our feet. I think we're out of time. Yep, 8:06. Man, we didn't... There's communion. Thank you, Jeffrey. Amen. Man, I just encourage you guys to come down and take communion with the Lord. It's something I do every time I'm in the house. It's so significant that we are... I recently heard, I think it was from the Upper Room, and they were teaching on communion, and the minister was saying there's no more powerful substance on the face of the earth than this. That's the blood of Jesus. It has the power to change everything. You say, man, that's grape juice, I know, but this is, when I take it, you know what I'm taking is the blood of Jesus. He says it's the most powerful thing on the planet. Because it can change everything. So I just encourage y'all, man, just come in and just take that with the Lord. Spend a little bit of time with Him. I love you guys. I love everybody. I love, man, all, I ain't even going to say Blake House guys and Victory guys. We're all family. You know, we're all family. There should be such a mingling that we can't tell who's who. Because we're just all, man, we're all His children. And we all walk in His love and His grace and His mercy. So, man, I count it an honor and a privilege just to be able to come and worship with y'all every week. And I hope y'all have a fabulous and amazing week this week. But the altar's open, and let's just come and spend a little bit of time with Him.